The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
That, of course, is the Rolling Stones. You can't always get what you want here on Northumberland 89.7. Welcome back to the Drive Time. My guests in the studio are Deb McCarthy and Rob Washburn. Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. And, of course, Deb McCarthy, town councilor right here in the town of Cobourg. Welcome to the show, Deb. Welcome back.
Thank you, Dave.
You're getting to be a bit of a regular up here at the station.
It's getting that way.
I know Brother Jim was talking to you just recently about the park, and we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other stuff. Tell the listeners, for those that aren't from Cobourg who are listening from abroad, even in Port Hope, what is your role on council?
Well, I'm a town councillor. I was elected October 27th, and with our current governance system, which is the way council's organized, I am the coordinator for community affairs, or community service, I should say. So I work with the tourism and special event coordinators on staff, but also I'm on a number of committees, for example, the Seniors Advisory Committee, the library. Boy, we were just naming them, weren't they? And I go a little blank. Okay, let me go down the list. Seniors Advisory, the Library, the Art Gallery of Northumberland. That's been a lot of effort in the last few months. I'm on the Accessibility Committee and...
DBIA, you're on the DBIA.
Well, yes, that was extra because they wanted to have another council member on the DBIA, and I have some past experience with DBIA, so that's normally not part of it. It's usually the deputy mayor, but I'm there as well. I'm the Farmers Market Liaison. I'm on the Cobourg Waterfront Festival Committee, and I'm sure there's more. I think there's eight or nine.
Wow, there's so many out there. Now, the first thing we wanted to talk about today when we got you into the studio was this this coordinator's portfolio and the governance model. And I know that the town is looking at changing that, or at least reviewing the governance model. Can you tell us how that's been going?
Yes. So a lot of people get kind of tripped up on the word governance, and basically it's how does council make its decisions. So right now it's a coordinator system, and we're appointed to a portfolio, and those have been set out. There's of course, the mayor, and the mayor has specific responsibilities. The deputy mayor is in charge of bylaws, policies, and budget. Huge, huge portfolio. And then the rest of us take on pieces, which involves planning. That's Councillor Darling. And then Councillor Rickerby, it's Parks and Recreation. Councillor Sherwin, it's Protection Services, which is police and fire and building code standards, that kind of thing. Councillor Roden is Public Works. That's a big one. And myself, I'm what's called Community Services, and it's a little unusual in that I don't work with a director because the senior management of council or Town of Cobourg is not organized that way, whereas there's a director of planning and the director of Public Works has Parks and Rec under him. And then, of course, Protection Services involves the police and the fire.
So he sits on the Police Services Board as well, then, right?
Yes, he does. Larry does. So I'm a little bit different. And usually what happens is at our Committee of the Whole, we provide what's called coordinator reports, where we provide updates on all the initiatives that are happening, for the most part, in our advisory committee. Sometimes that work is at that particular meeting as a recommendation, but not always. So we keep everybody informed and updated.
So that sounds like a really good way to organize things. Everybody has an area of specialization. Everybody has somebody that they're reporting to on staff, and there's liaison, and then you guys get together and share information. What would you like to see happen? What would you like to see different? Because it sounds like such a good system.
Sounds good on paper. Anyway.
Yes, indeed, it's been thought of as an efficient way to run council. Well, here are my beefs with it. And basically, I'm not a specialist. As it turns out, I have a little bit of expertise in some of the areas that I am advocating for within the town. But I believe that we come onto council not as specialists, but as generalists. And it's the collective group that provides the forum for debate and discussion. So what happens when it's the coordinator system is that, in my experience, I'm to be a conduit of information, but in fact, at that level working with staff, you're asked sometimes to, well, what do you think and what should we do and what direction? And for me, I don't want to make those decisions for council. Bring the report to council and all of us will decide, because who am I to filter any of the information? But that's also the other thing. I would like us to all hear the same information at the same time, because there is more information sharing, but it isn't all at the table. And it's not that it's secret. It's just that it just doesn't come to the table.
I know that Ben Bird's been a very big critic of the system, and that's one of the things that he talks about, is the need for a full disclosure of all things that are going on in all aspects of the town. And that mm-hmm. in the past, not necessarily with this council, but in the past, there's been a real shortchanging of information at times, because people are sort of treating those coordinatorships almost as a turf. And I'm not going to, you know, this is my turf and I do this kind of thing. How would your proposal break down those kinds of barriers, that sort of turf feeling to council, to make it more equitable and more flowing?
Well, it indeed is turf, because in our code of conduct, which is a policy we have to follow and agree to, we must work through the coordinator for information. In my idea and thinking of what Ben's talked about, I really believe that the information flowing from senior staff to council is the best way to receive it. Because it was really interesting. We had an education session with an expert in municipal law. He's a lawyer from Peterborough, Mr. Ewart. Anyways, he was describing the coordinator system as an efficient way to run government, and I asked him, well, you know, what do you mean by efficient? Because that word is loaded. And he said, well, there's fewer requests for under freedom of information or closed meeting. And I thought, well, there's that. But he also made a really interesting point. He said that because there is so much to know and understand, and it's sometimes impossible to grasp all of it, that when you take on a piece of the work, you know that, and your other members know that you have done your due diligence, and therefore the non-specialist counselor doesn't have to know it all. And I said, well, with all due respect, it's the flip for me. I am deadly uncomfortable in council trying to take a position on something when I don't have all the information. So, but it's going to be a struggle to figure out. And mm-hmm. where we're at now is that we did have a special meeting of Committee of the Whole, and we've narrowed it down to two systems that we're going to look at or compare, which is the status quo, which we have now, and also it's the model out of Blue Mountain, but we can adjust it as we want. But basically, it's that kind of system where reports come from senior management to all of council. But we have to figure out, because there's a whole ripple effect. What does that do to our advisory committees? And that won't change. That's part of the workload. And advisory committees will continue with the public. But what I'm interested in, because of the portfolio system, I'm not allowed to be on another committee that's very, very important to me. for example, the environment, because I'm not that coordinator. So there's lots to look at. We're bringing a report mm-hmm. forward in October.
Well, this is an opportunity, though, for staff to make a presentation to council and do it once, though. I mean, right now, the way it works out with the coordinator system is they'll make their presentation to the coordinator. They'll bring that to council, if I understand correctly. And then if there are any questions, then that staff member will be brought in and it'll be discussed even further. But if we have an open system or a more open system like you're proposing, the person would then come in, they'd make their presentation to all counselors, mm-hmm. and all questions would be asked and or answered at that time. There really wouldn't be. So really what we would be doing is lessening the burden for our staff.
Well, on paper, it's fewer meetings, but it potentially not, because the concern for senior staff, and we do have to address this, is that they could be called by all seven council representatives, whereas now the understanding is that they speak via one councillor, the portfolio. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of concerns we have to address. On the other hand, if all of us are to receive the same information, then we're simply copied on it. That's all. Mm-hmm. That's all I require is
a little CC and on that memo.
Exactly, which were our protocols we hopefully can set up. On the other hand, I just want to point out, though, whatever advisory committees a counselor serves on, there will still be a little bit of extra expertise of that part of the process at the council table. So that won't go away. Mm-hmm. And the public, the other point that has been made is, well, who will the public know to go to on certain issues? Well, my experience so far is, believe me, the town goes to whomever they want
Absolutely,
to. When they're concerned, right. I'll get emails mm-hmm. and phone calls on anything. And I believe that's appropriate, because I wasn't elected to run or, let's say, be the leader of community services. I have to vote on every issue. So, in fact, I think council members will know more to be a greater resource to the community at large, but also we will work more as a team.
Right. On that note, we're going to take our first break, but we'll be right. And welcome back to the Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. My guests in the studio are Rob Washburn and Deb McCarthy. Deb is your town council, one of your town councillors here in Coburg. We've been talking about the governance model. We want to move on, though, Rob, unless there's...
Yeah, I was reading the paper this evening, and I was surprised to read that on Monday night you made an announcement in regards to the Waterfront Festival and the Lions' contribution. Could you maybe tell us a bit about that, please?
Yes, the Lions Club traditionally organized the marketplace in the Victoria Park in the Bandshell, and they also have art show and sale. And what has happened is that the uptake on artists that wanted to rent a booth was just not there, so they made a decision about 2 weeks ago that the art sale would not go forward this year. I don't think that's a policy decision. It's just this year that's what's happening. And what they wanted to convey was it's not that there's a loss to that use of space. It'll just go to other vendors, and they're adding a kids' play area, which will add a lot. So, but in terms of culture and what people have, been used to at the festival, that's not there.
You mentioned that you noticed this is a growing trend. Could you talk a little bit more about what's the trend that you're seeing, and maybe why we should be concerned?
At the Coburg Waterfront Festival committee meeting, when it was suggested that they had to make an executive decision about this, they were providing information that this isn't unique to our Waterfront Festival, that in general these tents or these parts of festivals are declining. And we should understand that these artists would come from all over. They weren't necessarily local. It was just people that figured it was a good opportunity to showcase what they have and sell. But I did notice last year there were quite a few less artists and some groups that normally went there, even to just make people aware that they were local, didn't go. There is a cost to run a booth. I'm afraid I don't know what that is, and I don't know if that's what gets in the way. So I wouldn't like to think that that's a permanent decision, but certainly there needs to be a real rethink on how to attract the artists?
Well, in considering this in the context also of the things that are going on with the art gallery and the playhouse, and these are major cultural hives, I guess, in our town, is there a bigger pattern that's emerging in around culture in Coburg?
Well, pattern-wise, with respect to the visual arts, we all realize that the visual arts are very strong in the community. There are many, many artists. The art gallery is a bit different because it's more or less a museum art gallery, meaning it has a permanent collection, and it runs by criterion to run exhibitions, let's call them. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily just about showcasing local artists, although mm-hmm. that is what happens at the Port Hope Boutique, and that's very well received. So local artists can do shows there, and they have sales. But the art gallery, per se, is an education institution. It's a public place, and at this time, there's no charge. It's membership-driven. What we're finding with the art gallery is that, well, let alone the issues that it were confronted it over the last few years with, you know, management, senior management, which was a one-off, and that's being dealt with. But in general, the trend I'm seeing, and true to many of the arts groups, maybe even in sports and recreation, is the challenge to find volunteers that will step up to the board and carry through the sustainable vision of the enterprise and fundraise to make them sustainable. This is an issue everywhere. In respect to the art gallery, just a Trojan effort has been made. We are what is called an operational board because we have no staff. So we're getting ready to reopen. So it's been an incredible workload for the volunteers and me as the council rep myself. We're meeting every 2 weeks. It's quite a thing. So.
Well, we just got a call from one of our listeners out there, and I want to thank her for calling in. And she is she's actually a local potter. Mm-hmm. And she said that, she was asked to be in the art exhibit last year for the Lions down there. And her concern, and the concern of so many other local artists and other artisans, is the cost. They said it was just too expensive. You can't make any money as an artisan. And, of course, being a starving artist, like most folks who make a living at art, unless you're very successful, you know, you're a struggling artist. That's typically the way it is. And so what they're saying, or what she has expressed to me, is this idea that it was just too expensive for the artists, and maybe it's something that they could look at, the Lions, maybe reducing the price, or instead of charging a flat fee, maybe taking a percentage of sales or something else.
Yeah, well, I'll certainly take that feedback to the Lions Club. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm not surprised for artists. Covering the costs of a booth over 4 days is considerable. Yeah.
Oh, and then staffing as well. You've got to have someone in that booth. Something that was raised to me on Monday was the idea that on Canada Day. Now, Canada Day, typically the Bandshell is free. People can go there. They can celebrate Canada Day. There's a big presentation by the mayor. And I understand, I don't know, you can correct me on this if my information is wrong, but I understand there's actually being a separate stage being put into Victoria Hall at the north end of Victoria Park, because the area encompassing the Bandshell is going to be completely closed off unless you pay to get in.
Yes, so the area that's fenced in, that is a special event run by the Lions, mm-hmm. The Lions Club, and it is their event. So what's happened up to now is that on Canada Day, it was free.
Right.
This year, it's going to be completely done by the Lions Club. In other words, they'll run the events there for the 4 days and have their music and the vendors and that kind of thing. So what the town wanted to do, and by town I mean special events coordinator Laura Scott, was because of the parade and the fact that the north part of the park is empty, mm-hmm. and the logistics of that are still maintained just in the north part of the park where it's free. There'll be bands, and I did raise the issue. There's bands in both ends, yes, but yeah. Apparently they're going to offset it time-wise. So, and there's kids' activities, and the cake, the delegations, the celebration of mm-hmm. Canada Day will occur at that part, and it'll go from about 1 till 4.
So the town's paying to put up a stage then, or is that being paid for by the Lions Club?
No, that's the town okay. doing that. The logistics of putting up a stage, I guess that would be the park staff that will mm-hmm. do that. All of these special events are tracked for expenses. So I think there will be a lot of interest. How did that work out? Was there good use of it? Was there good uptake and response to an open area for the citizens? Did it affect the Lions Club? Mm-hmm. Those are all unknowns.
Because we did have two callers on Monday who said that they were not happy with the idea that the town is spending money on a stage when we have a perfectly wonderful facility there, that, you know, the band shell in the park. Why are we having to pay this expense to put up a stage in order to have a Canada Day event, which is typically free, when now it's not free? So now you've got to pay. Do you get to where the question is?
Oh, I get where you are.
We've got a free stage. It's open to the public. It has been every year for Canada Day after the parade. This year, that free stage isn't free, and we've actually had to go to the expense now of bringing in a stage at the North End. Whether it's being utilized for the festival or not, it's still an expense for the town. And folks were saying, well, are the Lions then paying for that stage?
Oh, yes. That's a special event application, the Rotary Club and the Lions Club. Mm-hmm. They cover off all the spaces that they use. So I don't know the answer to those questions. We will see. But it's a good one. And there'll be a report afterwards for sure. And so the town will know.
I'd be really interested to go back to talking about these cultural events and some of the struggle, because I know that part of the town's strategic plan is to develop a culture master plan. And when you're talking today, you're saying to us that, you know, cultural industry is good. We have lots of artists, lots of people out there producing and creating things. Yet somehow there's a disconnect between that and getting volunteers and these organizations up and for them to be successful. Could you maybe talk a bit about that gap and what you see happening in terms of a cultural master plan to bridge that gap?
And that's indeed what it is a gap. It's a void in town's planning and knowledge base that there was recognition of that, and this is our time to get it right. And what the cultural master plan will do is bring all the groups, the different art forms together through a consultative process. And because right now they're all working in silos, and there really could be an opportunity to share and connect and become aware of each other's goals and objectives and share times or offset. There's just so much potential because we work together. And because that hasn't been there, then when things come up like the Park Theater, there's no framework to understand, is that a good initiative? Is that a needed initiative within the context of the town's needs? And when I say cultural plan, it's multi-pronged. There's a recognition that culture is what makes communities vibrant, but there's also a piece of it that culture leads to economic development, and not everybody considers that. But for example, when Sifton Cook is open, when the Victoria Operetta Society, and it's not that I'm sure I'm missing other groups, Northumberland Players, when they have events that bring in people from other communities, there's economic development spin-off. So you see a cultural plan in the context of the whole of town, and not in this little silo, say, oh, that's for the arts folks, and then, oh, that's for the sports folks. In fact, we're all together. And the other part that's very important in a cultural master plan is understanding our assets, and not just what the town owns, although obviously we own the concert hall, but where are these events happening? And other groups could share maybe even a concert venue. So our churches are part of this, and it's all interlinked, but there isn't that big picture, which I really want to have in place. It's going to be a lot of work, but I know people are eager, and even the artists themselves. Mm-hmm. Where I've come from in Guelph, Ontario, the Arts Council was the hub. That doesn't seem to be the case here. It's not that it can't be, but what's the umbrella organization that everybody turns to be aware of what's happening? Mm-hmm. And so back to, for example, a master cultural plan in the Park Theater, although saving a heritage building is a good idea if it's doable or within, I don't know what is a reasonable cost. I can't say that. That's for the other group to decide, because that's the way it's been organized. But I don't know if we need another performing arts theater. And if it's developed as a sit-down venue, then that's not multi-use. we may lose an opportunity. We just haven't had that consultative process. That timing wasn't there for it. I mean, the park needs some attention if it's going to live, and the time is now. But it's just unfortunate we don't have that background. Excuse me, information.
The thing that sounds wonderful about this is that, you know, it's great to talk about artists and all these great things, but there's also money associated with these types of projects. And as we've seen with the art gallery, I mean, a worthwhile organization, a really important cultural aspect to our town. And there's all kinds of these kinds of things, just with the Lions and the art show. I mean, there's not, you know, no one's saying art's not a good thing, but there's costs and there has to be some balanced budget. So when you talk about a master plan, what about the financial aspect of it? How are we going to justify that? Should taxpayers' dollars be used for these things, and how much? And I mean, that's the whole problem with the playhouse. The Park Playhouse is its cost. So how do you work with that?
Every organization has to do its due diligence. So what happens is that groups ask for grants from the town, but relative to the whole budget, we're talking about a really tiny amount. I mean, compared to roads and the must-dos for a community. So what is important is a policy, and we don't have one. So what is important, and do the groups that are organized as nonprofits or nonprofits and charities, do they have a sustainable plan? Do they have their governance models in place that we can have confidence the funds will be used properly? But the big question is, what's valuable? What do we invest our money in? And that's a philosophical question, too, because myself, my background isn't athletics, but okay. I absolutely see the importance of a recreational facility. I have no problems with that at all. But culture, and by that I mean arts organizations, and I'm talking wide range, not just an art gallery. I'm talking about the camera club and the quilting groups, and there's just a myriad of groups out there that give an opportunity for self-expression that's meaningful for each person. Some people choose to make their living at that. That's a certain path. But for the rest of the community, cultural vitality really leads to a quality of life. And those are I think this cultural master plan will give us an opportunity to evaluate how important is that to us and whether or not how much money we want to spend on that. We don't know that information now.
And it must, in the context of the larger fiscal pressures that are on council, where does culture then fit into that bigger picture then?
Well, it's interesting. If you read the Municipal Act, we're allowed to promote culture. But there's the must-dos within our budget. And most people, when they think of municipal government, they want good roads. I'll tell you this. I did the municipal training with the Association of Municipalities in February, and basically 90% of any municipal budget is must-dos. Protection services, police, fire, the staff to carry out the work of roads and all that kind of stuff.
All that public works.
Yeah,
infrastructure
it's about 10% of the budget, any municipal budget, that's discretionary. So then you have to start saying, well, how are we going to spend it? Because that's a small piece, and it's precious money, and there's a lot of people clamoring for it. So as a counselor, I want to see the biggest benefit for most. That's my context. But we're seven individuals. I mean, we work from the frameworks we come from to say it's, you know, I'm going to advocate for this. So I will advocate for culture, but I don't want to do that at the expense of recreation. But certainly I will say it's time now, and I think there's recognition at council that we have to have those conversations about our cultural support and how far town can go with that.
Well, we got, you know, it's 20 to the hour. I know you got to leave early, and I got one more question for you, and this is really just something for you to think about, because one of the things that Ben and I have talked about on a number of occasions, anyone who's ever played Monopoly knows there's a community chest, right? There's no community chest here. We don't, and really, we could be using the money from Lucy, and through the industrial park, and even the money that's raised through other capital acquisitions. We should be creating a community chest where community organizations can go to for funding, rather than using that 10% discretionary from council. And that's just something I wanted to put in your head. Maybe the possibility of bringing that to the other councillors and saying, you know, maybe we should start using the profits that we're earning from our public assets and putting those into a community chest and using those monies for a reserve for capital projects like the Park Theater, for instance, or like anything else, like the Fountain Ice Rink, like providing funding for Sifton Cook, for instance, or providing a venue for the Northumberland Players. And if we were able to turn that into something that would be self-sustaining, then we wouldn't have to go to the town all the time for money.
Well, I agree. The hold, they're called hold coal funds that come from our utilities, mm-hmm. and also we'll be getting some revenues from Northam once the debentures paid off. I agree. The money does belong to the town of Coburg and hence the citizens. So what's the most thoughtful way we can spend that money? And that's, for me, the essential reason mm-hmm. for having a cultural master plan, because then that brings the last piece to the table, which then we can understand it in the context of all of our needs.
Right. Well, on that note, we're going to bring it to a close. I want to thank you for being here, Deb. Obviously, many more questions left on the table. Rob's looking at me like,
well, I'll
I
come
wanted
back.
To have so much more. So we'll have to have you back on another occasion. But
thank
I
you.
Know you have a big meeting tonight that you have to attend. My guest has been Deb McCarthy. She is a Coburg counselor here in the town of Coburg. Rob Washburn, of course, will be sticking around. We're going to take a few minutes to pay some more bills. And we'll be right back with more conversation right here on Northumberland 89.7 without Deb McCarthy. Welcome back to The Drive Time. Thanks, Deb McCarthy, for being here. She did have to run off. She's got a big board meeting to attend. So, again, that's just one of the many, many jobs that town councilors have to take on, the many hats they have to wear. You got to wonder, why are they being paid? Why are we paying our town council a part-time wage when they're working their tails off?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. This discussion around the governance model is really fascinating because, on one hand, this is part of the problem is that you get into these information silos and the specialization, and there's huge commitments, as you say. I mean, all kinds of meetings that they mm-hmm. attend on a regular basis, and then they have to have this expertise, and they're working their portfolios, and now they want to open it up. And one of the things that I'd be curious of is how is that going to affect their workload? I mean, if now all of a sudden I'm not just responsible for knowing what's going on at the library or at the Waterfront Festival, but now I'm interested in environmental issues or mm-hmm. planning issues. I mean,
or just issues they, at large.
Yeah. Is it going to mean that they're going to be coming back and saying, hey, this is a full-time job now? And, you know, that has many implications, not just for serving councillors, but, you know, people in the future who want to run for council. You know, do we want to have our politicians or people running for political jobs full-time?
Like that. Well, I think if they're going to be working the full-time hours, the least we can do is give them a full-time wage.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, I guess maybe down the road where you'll have, you know, career politicians running for jobs like that. But again, that's all about the expertise that, you know, as Deb said, you know, she was a layperson. I mean, she does have some experience from her previous life and all of that. But not all of that prepared her for the portfolio
but
she was taking on.
Dave,
right?
we're a town of 18,500 people. We're not talking about Metro Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, I can understand in a large urban center or, you know, Ajax, Pickering, you know, places like that. Sure, okay, that makes sense to me. But we're a town. I mean, are we really to a point where we've got so much going on that we need full-time politicians? I mean, I don't know, but that's pretty scary if that's what we need.
Well, all I'm saying is if they're working 70 hours a week, which many of them are,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, I know Larry Sherman last time around was working. I mean, he told me one time that he was working, plus he has a full-time job.
No kidding.
I mean, he has a job full-time, plus the time he was putting in as a town councillor.
Yep.
And I mean, you know, it's a full-time job. You know, we were talking about income security, you and I, on a number of occasions.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, if you're paying someone a part-time wage and you're expecting them to give you 110% or the full-time
absolutely.
Energy, the least we can do is do that. So that's one of the things that sort of came to mind when we were talking about this.
Absolutely.
But I want to talk a little more about this issue, and I know we put it in Deb's ear, this idea that the ban shell isn't going to be free on Canada Day. Now, a lot of people were upset with the fact that they were charged uh-huh. last year.
Yep.
And a lot of people flat out said they weren't going. They were going to boycott.
Yep.
And I don't know if the numbers were down last year or not. I've under the understanding that they were slightly off from
That's
the previous
correct.
Years.
That's my recollection.
And what we're not going to see is more people willing to go to pay to enter Victoria Park. I mean, let's face it, taxpayers pay all year long for that space. And you know, there's no reduction on your tax roll during the summer because of these spaces being utilized. And the idea that we've had to spend money, the town has spent money, the special events coordinator, Lara Scott, has had to spend money to put a stage in the north end of Vic Park so that we can do the big cake ceremony and the Canada Day celebration and yep. the welcoming and all of the speeches from our local dignitaries. That has to be done on a separate stage at our additional expense because the Lions for that day aren't willing to open up the park. And I don't understand what the deal is on that.
I'm shaking my head here with you, Dave. I'm really confused because, you know, last year it seemed there was a really clear message delivered to the Lions. And I know that they said, you know, we need this money. This is expensive. We're trying to raise funds. And God mm-hmm. bless them that they're doing a fantastic job and they contribute to this mm-hmm. community in
Absolutely.
So many ways. But I think this is just making the whole situation worse. You know, I think sometimes a good political strategy is to know when to back away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this, you know, when they started charging to get into that area, to be able to be part of the retail mm-hmm. aspect of it and the band shell, and then to have to pay again to get into the arts and crafts section, which they're obviously going to lose this year from what Deb said earlier.
Well, let's just to clarify, though, that arts and crafts section, she was talking about the artisan section of the Lions Pavilion. Now, generally, that's where your graphic artists are, your
that's
painters,
right.
what have you.
That's right.
The artisan tent, which is the other tent run by the Rotary,
yes.
is a separate entity, and they've
Absolutely.
Been charging for years. But the other side, where the Lions are, where they have the visual artists, if you will, those people weren't charged. My understanding is they were charged a donation fee.
Yeah.
So it was almost like a percentage thereof. But it still becomes expensive. And with the way the weather has been over the last few weeks, I mean, yep. to be a visual artist showing your stuff in the rain where there's potential mm-hmm. for damage, I mean, mm-hmm. that's part of the other issue why perhaps the numbers are off. But as far as attendance is concerned,
yeah.
this additional fee and the additional – because, again, you know, the federal government announced last week that they were going to crack down on banking fees. Canadians are tired of fees. You know, we want to see these festivals, but
yep.
the other problem, as you said a moment ago, is, okay, well, then who covers the nut on these things?
That's right. And so, but what's happened is that last year, if you recall, there was no public announcement about this, no publicity.
Mm-hmm.
People got sort of blindsided by it, didn't understand it, and there was these boycotts and this really big backlash. Now that we're having this, the band shell, we can't get to that. We're building the stages. You've just described the situation. I think it's compounding and it's making it worse. And in fact, you know, some people might start to look at this and say, this is about greed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're trying to build this, whereas, you know, it used to be a time when we would go down. It was all open space. The bands played. You had a good time. If you wanted to go see the wonderful artwork, you know, you paid. You got in to see that. If you wanted to go over to the Rotary section and see their stuff, you paid to get in there. And that's how they raised their money.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to work for over a decade or more.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, in the last 2 years, it's been, well, you know, how can we milk a little, you know, a little bit extra money out of
it? That's the perception anyway.
And absolutely. And I know that that's not what the Lions are trying to do, but at the same time, that's how it's coming across.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this mm-hmm. thing with the stage is just going to make it worse.
Well, I think you're right. And because, again, you know, the one section where you pay to get in so you can check out the vendors.
Yep.
Well, then charge the vendors more. Don't charge an entrance fee. Charge the vendors a little more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that simple. They're the ones who are making the money.
That's right.
You know, I mean, these guys are operating pop-up businesses, essentially, right?
Yep.
And, I mean, the reality is, why should I have to pay $5 or whatever it is to give it? Because $5 isn't a lot of money, but it's a lot of money to a family of five, right? I mean, that's an outlay of cash for a family of five that they may not have. And maybe it's $10. Maybe it's $5 for kids and $10 for adults. So now you've got a family of five, mom and dad, there's $20 plus the kids. That's another 15. I mean, we're nickel and diming people.
Exactly.
That's really what it comes down to. And the other issue for me is, okay, so great, you want to charge, it's a four-day festival. Am I correct on this?
That's right.
So Canada Day is one of those days. So on Canada Day, then perhaps the Lions should be exempt from any fees from the town on that day so they can cover that cost and allow people to come into the Canada Day for free.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. And I also think, too, the fact that taxpayers' dollars are having to be used to create a second stage when we have this beautiful historic band show that can be used, why aren't we using it?
Well, and one of the questions that came up last year, of course, was this idea of damage to the park. Now, we do have a caller coming through. We're going to take you live on the air. So I hope you're prepared. Hello, you're welcome to the drive time. Hello? Hello?
Please hang up and try your...
Okay, I guess the person hung up. You can call through, by the way, 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391. We will take your calls. But as I said earlier today, we don't have anyone answering phones. So if I answer the phone, you will be going live to air. So we will take that call right now. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, I won't hang up on you, Dave.
Okay.
Okay, so
From what I can see, we're creating a situation where you have people who can afford to go into the park and people who can't afford to go in the park, and it was always equal for everybody, and now it's not.
It's less equal.
I think that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, you know, like, what I don't understand what happened all of a sudden that we have to pay to go and buy things from people. Like, that's the whole point of being there is mm-hmm. looking at the stuff that's for sale, right?
Right.
And listening to the people on the stage. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So that, well, okay, I want to keep you on the line for a second, because
sure.
it sounds to me like you were one of the people that perhaps last year decided you were just going to boycott it. You were saying,
that's
I'm
correct.
Just not going to pay it.
That's right.
Now, did you speak to a number of people who were of the same mind, and do you think that that's going to be the same thing this year?
Haven't talked to anybody about it this year yet, but there were other people who did the same thing I know of last year.
Right. So what would you like to see? Do you have a problem with as I suggested, okay, it's a four-day festival, but Canada Day is Canada Day, and that should be free. Should we just perhaps open the festival to the public? For the one day, and the rest of the days? Because, again, the problem is this. You know, last year there was a major cost afterwards, you know, and it was brought up after the Rib Fest, that all the damage that was being done to the Victoria Park. The Victoria Park is supposed to be a passive park, not an active park. Mm-hmm. And yet, unfortunately, this is where we hold our major events. Now, for a few weeks out of the summer, the park takes a beating. And there's a lot of money. I mean, I know the town spent a lot of money last year on trying to bring the park back to its loveliness because of all the damage that was done just with the festivals. Because, again, they're so close together, right? I mean, we've actually got a festival coming up before Waterfront Festival mm-hmm. this year, of course, because the Highland Games are coming,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, so, there's the other thing. That used to be over at Donegan, mm-hmm. which was somewhat inconvenient.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, let's face it. They're putting too much traffic on the grass. So, yeah, and it's not just the Rib Fest. The Rib Fest was just the...
Well, that was sort of the tip of the...
The straw that broke the camel's back.
Right, that was sort of the one where people said, okay, you know what, I'm walking through the park with my kid, and I'm stepping in grease. This is crazy.
Oh, well, that's just...
You know, so again...
That's bad, and that's, you know, the vendor's problem right there.
Mm-hmm. But that just made the issue so glaringly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the letters started coming to the, and the town started getting calls from citizens saying, you know, what the heck are we doing to this beautiful, pristine park of ours? We're destroying it for a few weeks out of the year, and the rest of the year it's traumatized. It's like a PTSD victim almost, really.
Well, where was Ribfest held before? Was it in the same place last year as it's always been?
Yep. Yeah, it's always been in that part of the park. They rejigged it a bit last year, but it's always been in that park, that part of the park, the southern part of Victoria. But this is why during a show a few months ago, we were talking about perhaps expanding where the soccer fields are up at the CCC and maybe considering holding events there, or maybe utilizing the tannery property, which is still available, I understand, and creating a field like they have in Port Hope. They have fairgrounds in Port Hope.
Okay, well, to me, it would have made more sense to put the CCC near the old arena on the tannery property,
mm-hmm.
but that would have required some cleanup of a brownfield, and I'm guessing that's why they didn't do it. I wasn't part of the conversation back then, so I don't know whether it was even a consideration.
Right.
But to me, that would have made more sense to have all the arenas, all the pads close by, so if you're having a big tournament or something, everybody knows where they're going, and you're not wandering all over the place. And there is, let's face it, the CCC is a nice building, but it's kind of in the middle of nowhere as far as everything else
right
goes.
Right now it is, but they're going to develop that area, right?
Well, now there's the thing. When the discussion first came about putting the arena there and being a community center, people were saying, okay, but what about the depot? Where are, you know, they're losing their green space.
Mm-hmm.
And now... You know, you were talking about percentages of people eating up parts of the harbor yesterday.
Mm, that's right, yeah.
To me, I'm seeing the same thing here.
Right.
You know, you get where I'm going here?
Yeah, yeah. You're talking about the Play-Doh analogy where you get 100 kids and two kids have 25% and they say they want another 25% because they just can't get by on the 25 they have. And, oh, well, we'll make a compromise and only take 12.5 then
yeah,
instead.
Yeah, so back to the have-nots. Like, I mean, the people that live over there have got little enough as it is.
Right.
And you're taking, I don't know what the percentage has already gone to build the arena, but I mean.
But that is open to everybody, right?
Yeah, sort of. Who can afford to play hockey? This is part well, this of. You talked about this before too.
But this is why the CCC, and I know that Parks and Rec are looking at other ways that they can utilize the CCC to better affect the wellness of all the people who want to use it, not just the hockey teams, not just the indoor sporting events, but other things.
Yeah. Well, back to the brownfield over at the tannery. Mm-hmm. It would have made way more sense to have it all close by.
Well,
so
I wanna...
that you've got all the things that are, you know. Right there.
Right. I'm going to give you the last word. Thanks a lot on that
okay.
one, Deb.
Yep, no
appreciate
problem.
That. My guest has been Rob Washburn. You've been listening to Consider This Live on The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. Thanks for tuning in. Tomorrow on the broadcast, so much more information coming. You know what? I can't keep track of it all. By the way, join us right after the top of the hour with the Cedar Rail Gang. Here's Elvis Presley, a little less conversation. Thanks, Rob.
Thank
we'll see you next week.